This episode of Ghost Stories is brought to you by Satrix, the leading provider of index tracking solutions in South Africa and a proud partner of Ghostmail. With no minimums and easy, low-cost access to local and global products via the Satrix Now online investment platform, everyone can own the market. Visit satrix.co.za for more information. Welcome to this episode of the Ghost Stories podcast. It's another one with the team from Satrix, who won a lot of awards, by the way, at the recent industry awards. I actually put something on Ghostmail just this week about that, so go and check it out and see all the wonderful accolades that the Satrix team is receiving for all the excellent work that they do. And we've met so many of the team members over the course of this podcast series, but today we have someone new, which is really exciting. So Lauren Jacobs, you're a senior portfolio manager at Satrix, and I see that they finally managed to persuade you to come out and do a podcast with me. So welcome. I believe today is your first podcast, isn't it?
Thanks for having me, Ghost. Yes, it is my first podcast. I'm quite excited, but also a little bit nervous. So let's see how it goes.
No, it's going to be great. I promise it's much less scary than the markets, that I can absolutely assure you. So
that is true, yes.
Yeah, exactly. So what we're going to do today, the whole idea behind this podcast is just a day in the life of a portfolio manager. But obviously, I'm not going to miss the opportunity to ask you some interesting questions. Lauren, we were talking a bit off air about how long you've been at Satrix and at Sunlum before that. I think you said you started at Sunlum basically in the global financial crisis, essentially 2008. So probably just before everything blew up, was it? Or was it in the middle of all the pain?
Yeah, so I joined Sunlum in around November 2008. So I've been at Sunlum in the group since 2008. So almost 16 years now, 17 years almost. Yeah, I've been at Satrix now for 11 years, since 2014. Obviously, I came in, I wasn't a portfolio manager before, so I came in as an analyst and worked my way up from there. I had to do all the hard work, and yet I am now as a senior portfolio manager.
Yeah, very, very nice. Look, I think you've gotten to see the incredible growth in ETFs in South Africa, and Satrix has always been at the forefront of that. I mean, a Satrix Top 40 ETF was the first ever listed thing that I bought. I can't remember how many years ago that was now, but certainly, you know, very early in my career, that was the first thing that I bought. And I think a lot of people have a similar story, that Satrix Top 40 ETF has been around for a very long time. And of course, these days, there's a very broad product suite at Satrix, and people think that ETFs, well, actually, I don't think people think this anymore, and I hope they don't if they've been listening to the show, because I'm not sure how they would still believe that ETFs are a bit boring and a bit vanilla, because they actually let you do a lot. They really let you do a lot. And, you know, speaking of things that are not boring, I think the term portfolio manager is one of those jobs that really comes up a lot when you ask, you know, look, if you ask a toddler, they're going to tell you fireman or, you know, policewoman or, you know, take your pick, or I want to be a dinosaur when I'm big, that one too. But once you ask someone who's a bit older, and maybe someone who's studying finance, maybe someone who's early in their career, portfolio manager is one of those glamour jobs that tends to come up. It's right up there with investment banker. You know the drill. So was it always that way for you? Was that always where you were heading, or did your road actually take some twists and turns along the way?
Yeah, very interesting. I actually started off in asset consulting, you know, in an analyst kind of role. And it gives you a very broad view of portfolios in general and what there is in terms of access for clients in all investment vehicles. And from there, when I moved into Sunlum, and from there, I went into private wealth, which was also quite interesting, again, focused around clients. But when I came into Sunlum specifically, I was more on the back end support services, so performance and, you know, looking at portfolios from the bottom up. So understanding, you know, how do all the portfolios work, not only at that point index tracking, but also, you know, generally in the whole of Sunlum Investment Management. And I think that gave me a very good background and standing specifically for index management, because or index tracking specifically, because it's a very niche role. And people think, you know, what is indexation? You're just buying the index. You just can buy all the stocks and then you can go on holiday. But actually, you can't. An active manager can, definitely. They can buy and hold for 6, 12, 18 months and say, oh, they're riding the wave. But as an index tracker, you are held to your tracking performance. So if you are behind the index by 1% or ahead of the index by 1%, you are not tracking. So you have to be very close to that index return. And it's harder work having trying to be close to that index return than actually just choosing stocks and letting them ride the wave. You know, on a daily basis, we have to ensure that your portfolio, A, looks like your benchmark, and any changes to the benchmark, you know, the benchmark, the index changes seamlessly. If there's a corporate action, if there's a dividend, there's nothing that has to be done on the benchmark to change the benchmark. But your portfolio, because it has to then mimic the benchmark, you have to implement that with a trade. So there's a lot of thought behind how do I trade this fund to get to that index change? At what point do I trade it? Because all the prices have to be the same as that of the index. And how do I take into account the cost of these trades? So it seems like, oh, indexation, passive, it's so easy. But it takes a lot of hard work, and it also takes a lot of, you have to be very, have a lot of attention to detail, which it's very important in terms of index tracking. So yeah, I mean, I started out as an analyst in Satrix, and then moved on and learned, you know, how we track indices. When I started at Satrix, you know, I think we had about 50 funds or 50 portfolios that we looked after. Maybe some of, we had obviously ETFs, we had some segregated mandates, and now we're sitting at 160 plus portfolios. And the interesting part of that is that, you know, even though we are now at 160, we still only 4 portfolio managers. So it's important for us also, we rely very heavily on technology, and we are constantly evolving in the way in which we manage our portfolios using different technologies within the business. Yeah, so that's just a little bit of what we do on our side.
No, that was super interesting. I mean, I have always wondered about the nuts and bolts behind some of these ETFs. And obviously, some of them are easier than others, right? It depends on the liquidity of the underlying instruments. I mean, we can get into some of that. You know, there's stuff that's offshore, there's stuff that's local. So that is a pretty interesting area. It's actually, as I kind of expected, it's a completely different job to what a portfolio manager would do in an active asset management environment where they are actually picking stocks, they are expressing a macroeconomic view, et cetera. And the reason why people are attracted to ETFs is, one, because of the low cost. So that's a core part of what you're doing, obviously, is keeping those costs down. And two, because the ETFs just take all the emotion out of it, right? It's not that you are investing in a specific asset manager and their worldview, which can change depending on what happens. You know, the ETF's job is to track, as you say. So I guess that's what you're measured by, right? Is your tracking error and your costs to actually get the ETF right. And am I right that some of them are easier than others? I mean, some of them must give you serious headaches.
So in terms of indexation and tracking, specifically at Satrix, we do physical tracking. So that means we hold the underlying stocks in the index, right? But you can do it one of two ways with physical stock. You can either do full replication, which means that like a Satrix 40, there's 40 stocks in the portfolio. They're the top 40 stocks, so they're quite liquid. You can buy every single one of them in the same constituent weights as that of the index. But then you get an index like your MSCI World, which is 1,300 plus stocks. And you can't necessarily buy all of those stocks. You can definitely buy them. It's going to be a bit costly, and you know, you might not get everything you want depending on the size of your portfolio. So what we do there is we use optimization. So what it says is we take a subset of stocks in that index, and we track the risk and return characteristics of the index using a subset of that 1,300 stocks. So maybe we use 900, maybe we use 1,000. We use a specific optimization model that then looks at all the risk characteristics of the underlying stocks, you know, where it is in terms of geography, what is the GIC sector, and what are the other factors that may affect whether or not this subset can track the index. So those are the two ways in which we actually track the indices. Obviously, where you have a Satrix 40, where there's 40 stocks and you can get them quite easily in the market, if you have to trade for a corporate action or index change, it's quite easy to trade that portfolio. You would then do a full replication. But the implication there is that you have to ensure that any change to the index, any corporate action is implemented exactly as per the index, or else you're going to miss track. So, for example, when it comes to index rebalance, we prepare ahead of time. You know, there are definitely some portfolios where it's only the shares in issue that change, or it's only the weighting factors that change. But on top of that, you also have to remember that there are different index providers. So you have your FTSE JSE, you have your S&P, you have your MSCI, and there are a number of other index providers. And some of those index providers treat securities differently, depending on, you know, is it a global view? Is it a local only view? Is it a country view from a global index provider? There's all these nuances that you have to take into account. And maybe you trade in corporate action on one security, but across different indices, it's treated differently. So there's a lot of preparation around how am I going to trade this fund, and this fund if it's a different index, but the security is the same in all these funds. You know, what is the plan? What time am I going to trade it? When am I going to trade? Like, there's all these different nuances you have to take into account. Over and above the index trade or which index provider you're using, you also have to take into account what is the vehicle? Is it a unit trust? Are there CIS rules? Is it an ETF? What are the rules there? Is it a segregated mandate? Is it, if you're tracking offshore, is it a UCITS? So, you know, there's just these layers of how am I going to trade this fund so that I don't miss track, given all of these rules that I have to take into account?
Sure. That's interesting. That's genuinely interesting. I mean, it's such a technical role, right? This is definitely not a case of read the market news and then express a view in the slightest. This is about taking the rules and making sure you apply them as best you can in the market. And how often are these indices typically rebalanced, you know, because it's not every day, right? You're not sitting and tracking something every day. It's how often the index is rebalanced. And I'm sure that's different per index, but what is the typical timeline?
So generally your sort of market cap weighted indices, or they generally rebalance once a quarter. You know, FTSE JSE is the third working Friday of each quarter. So March, June, September and December, and generally that always falls close to a public holiday, which is not great for us, but, you know, we work.
I saw the pain in your face there. There was people can't see it because this is not a video, but I saw the pain.
Yeah, generally it's always around a public holiday. But yeah, so FTSE JSE is usually those are the rebalance dates. Your MSCI, they rebalance in February, May, August and November. So they are different rebalance periods. Those are usually quarterly. For example, your bonds and your ILBs, those rebalance on a monthly basis, and they have a reweighting and reconstitution. So yeah, it just depends what the index is. I mean, you have your momentum or your factor indices. Those might rebalance more frequently. We have some mandates that track not Satix momentum, but other momentum indices where they actually rebalance monthly as well. So it just depends how the index is constructed and what is the index trying to achieve. That would dictate what the rebalance periods are. And then, of course, you know, when there's a corporate action, your index also effectively rebalances depending what the construction methodology is. That can be any time. Whenever a company does something weird and wonderful, we have to then implement it on the portfolio based on what the change is in the index.
And they love doing weird and wonderful, right? This happens a lot. I loved what you raised earlier about the full replication versus the optimization. Obviously, that's such a cool thing, right? So it's all about, you know, it's cost benefit. Like, technically, could you go own all 1,300 stocks in, I think you said, the MSCI? I mean, you probably could, but I can imagine that's very expensive. And you're owning a long tail of stocks that actually contribute a very tiny percentage of how the index moves. And I guess the argument is, well, the cost outweighs the benefit of having that long tail of stocks, and then you use some other clever ways to replicate, right?
Yeah, so it's quite interesting because we obviously manage a local fund where we buy the underlying stocks in the MSCI World, which is our Satix MSCI World Unit Trust. But we also manage Irish-based funds or Irish-domiciled funds for Sanlam Asset Management Ireland, and those are UCITS vehicles. So we also track MSCI World there. So what we've had to do across the two different vehicles, given, you know, the different regulations for each vehicle, locally, because of your BN90 rules in your unit trusts, we've actually had to go and hold all the stocks in the MSCI World. So that effectively is a once-off trade because your smaller stocks, when it comes to index rebalance, to the index reviews, there might not specifically be any changes there. So you can then, once you now hold everything, do an optimization where you, every time you trade, you maybe not buying 1,300 stocks. You only buy a subset when you have to reinvest cash or for corporate action. Whereas on the UCITS side, we hold, 1,000 stocks. And I mean, obviously, there is an effect on what return you get because when you're holding all the stocks, maybe you're not, you know, some of the smaller stocks can contribute quite a bit given if that is 1.5% and all the small caps are doing well, then, you know, you do miss out on that if you're not holding it in your optimized model. But yeah, I think it's just interesting how also indices have changed over time. So when I started, I mean, I think there was 1,500, 1,600 stocks in MSCI World, and now there's only 1,300. So it is easier to get all of those stocks. And also because most of the time you're doing a once-off trade and then maybe, you know, when you have to sell it to go in for an index deletion. And then when you look at the FTSE JSE, similarly, when I, you know, started working at Satrix, there were about 160 stocks in the index. So we also did an optimization on the local all-share trackers. It's CAP, SWIX, CAP, all-share, and your SWIX indices. At that point, we also did an optimization because the liquidity in that tail was not great. We now are sitting at, 126 stocks. So we actually are holding almost all of those, but there are obviously liquidity issues in some of the stocks in the index. And because we are quite a large player, you know, if we need to trade, we can't go and trade a stock that takes 5, 6, 7 days to trade. So we do look at liquidity there. So yeah, that's just how, you know, indices have changed over time and how they're constantly changing and the way in which companies are coming in or going out of the indices. It's very interesting also just how it's changed over time. And having been here as long as I've been, I've seen a lot of these changes coming through.
Yeah, I mean, you raised there something I wanted to actually ask you anyway, which is how you've basically been, well, Satrix has been a victim of its own success in some regards because some of these ETFs are quite big. And so it's more money that you need to move through potentially illiquid stocks. And people in the market are not stupid. You know, if they know that something's going to fall out of an index, then you've got traders, you've got hedge funds, you've got people with derivatives who know that there's going to be selling pressure. You know, if you know something is falling out the bottom of the top 40 at the end of a particular quarter, you know that the ETFs need to dump that stock. Now, you don't have a choice. You have to track the index. And if you are a clever trader, you can play all kinds of interesting games around that. And that, of course, is part of what you're up against because you want to try and get out of it, you know, at the best possible price. I mean, that's a market. That's how a market works, right? You've got people on different sides of a trade. Everyone's trying to either make money or manage according to a mandate. And that's what keeps this big machine ticking that we both know and love so well.
Yeah, so we have to trade responsibly as well. We understand the impact of, as you said, you know, they know 3 weeks before the time we're coming and we're going to be selling and we're going to be buying and what levels we need to buy and what percentage in the indices. So when we come to market at index rebalances, we do a lot of liquidity testing beforehand. So once we know what's going to happen in the index rebalance, we look at what's coming in, what's falling out, where we might have issues around selling or buying some stocks in the index. And we also have to trade responsibly. So we make sure that, say, we are bringing in a new stock into the index, but if we see that it's going to take longer to trade into the stock, we might trade it. We might also trade it longer so that we're not pushing the price on that index rebalance day. You know, we're very conscious of our size. We're conscious that, yes, we want the closing price, but if we're going to push the closing price way down, then we don't want to affect the market in that way. So we do take steps to ensure that if we are going to be a big player in a stock, that we manage that trade, whether it's over a day or over 2 days, to ensure that we don't move the market too much in, in that regard. But there's also surprises. So, you know, over time, sometimes you'll be surprised on an index rebalance day, because not only is everybody coming into the market, so the volumes are high on that day, but also it's usually around, well, locally, specifically with FTSE JSE, it's usually futures closeout. There's a lot of volume in the market. So sometimes we might overthink it and maybe be very cautious, but there's also a lot more volume at index rebalance because everybody is in the market. So there just tends to be more availability of stock. The more difficult part is actually when there's corporate actions, right? Because if a stock is falling out and you're getting cash and you have to reinvest it, and it's quite a large portfolio, that's like a random day in the week. It's not an index rebalance day when there's a lot of volume. So that is actually trickier than an index rebalance to prepare ahead of the time and say, okay, this is where we're coming in. So we work closely, you know, sometimes with the index providers as well, and say, look, I mean, we understand this is coming up, but this is the impact for us. You know, is there another way to look at this? Can we bring in a cash line for a few days? So we, as a big provider of index tracking products, we also have to always look to the market and say, you know, this is where we are, and this is what's going to impact us. Can we talk about it? Can we see what we can do? Yeah, so we are very conscious of our impact. So we work very hard to ensure that we don't create any changes in the market that could affect all investors.
Yeah, brilliant. So that's what an award-winning team does, right? So it's really, really good to learn some of that stuff. And you do see some really big changes. I mean, hot off the press at the time of recording, at least, is what's going on with Aspen. I'm not sure where Aspen is in the top 40, but if they're anywhere near the bottom, I don't know if they're going to be there on the next rebalancing, because that share price was down like 30% when last I looked. We'll see where that shakes out. But this stuff happens, and that's what ends up, or that's what drives things like index deletions, or you have another stock that comes, you know, roaring up through the ranks and then gets into the index and obviously kicks something out the bottom. It's like football, right? Someone gets relegated out of the top 40. That's just how this game works. Well, we still got some time, and because you're obviously so passionate about everything you do, maybe just a high level question or two more around, I hate calling it passive investing, mainly because Nico shouts at me because he always says that, you know, allocating to an ETF is an active decision. And of course he's completely right. But you've kind of been in both, it sounds like. And I mean, just your experience working in ETFs for this long, et cetera, you obviously are passionate about the space. You obviously firmly believe in it, as do I. Do you kind of advocate for, you know, even just in your own money, because obviously you're not giving generic advice here, but just with your own money and how you do it, are ETFs a big part of your own wealth creation strategy? Do you leave a little bit of space to do some active investing and do some stock picking as well? Or are you busy enough with index rebalancing?
So I've always kind of taken the stance that I'm not an analyst. I don't know companies back and forth, but I do know that an index gives me this diversification. If you look at your top 40, you've got such a diverse number of companies there. And it's also sometimes the companies, you know, it's an Absa, it's a Woolies, and you've got this wide variety, but it's in an index that is saying, in terms of the market caps, here's a Satrix 40, you know, it's giving you a diverse exposure to specific equities, but it's not, yes, the active decision is choosing Satrix 40, but in terms of the underlying, I don't have to make that decision. The index makes that decision. So I've always thought that using an index strategy not only allows this diversification in terms of the stocks, but also it doesn't eat away at your performance because the costs are low. So that is where I advocate for index tracking, because the cost of active management and the cost of, like, not index managers is what is eating away at your performance over time. So even if you look at your retirement, because there you can also invest in like a Satrix balanced, or you can use that fund and the underlying is all index tracking, but the cost is low. So, you know, if you look over time, the amount of money you effectively lose, in inverted commas, to that performance fee of an active manager, you gaining that by staying in the market with your index tracker and also getting it at the lower fee. So in my personal, you know, portfolios and so on, I do obviously gravitate towards your index stacking because that's my passion. And also it gives you a much broader environment to choose from. So if it's local, if it's offshore, it can be bonds, it can be ILBs. It gives you such a wide variety at such a low cost that you can, you know, you can pick and choose. Now you can pick and choose which do you want to go global bonds? Do you want to go local property? It gives you so many options. And also at Satix, I mean, we have a plethora of products to offer you. So yeah, it's also around just giving people options. So when I talk to my kids about investing and about looking at an index and what it means, you know, it's really just showing them that there's this wide variety of a diversified set of stocks in this index that gives you such an opportunity to be able to invest in it, to see how your money grows or changes over time and what the impact is of the market, of news in the market on those indices. So yeah, I'm a huge advocate for index tracking in your portfolio, and I will always be.
Yeah, I mean, it is great. Look, single stock picking is really tough and is a very, very, I don't want to say dangerous. It's not dangerous, but it's something that you need to commit yourself to. It's not something you can just do on the fly. I think a lot of people learned that the hard way in recent years. And I always have mad respect for those who said, you know what, I got burnt or I don't know what I'm doing here. It's that Dunning-Kruger curve, you know, they go into that like valley of hopelessness or whatever it is. I can't remember exactly what it's called. And then a percentage of them say, okay, I'm actually going to commit to learning about this. And they come out the other end with this wonderful skill set. And you've just learned so much about business and everything else. You know, I always think when I'm writing Ghost Mail, like those are my people, you know, the ones who really want to actually get up the curve. Because yeah, I mean, everyone loves being a concentrated portfolio hero until Aspen goes and smacks you in the face. I mean, I'm looking at the chart now, again, relevant to time of recording only, obviously. But Aspen now over 5 years has returned a total of 2% after this latest fall in the share price. Over 5 years, not per annum, total. It has absolutely been caned by this latest news flow. So yeah, you know, you can go and have 20% of your portfolio in this high conviction position in Aspen, and you would have looked like a hero right up until August 2024, roughly. And then you would have stopped looking like a hero very, very quickly. So yeah, it's a tough game. And that's why ETFs, I think, are so important. And even for someone like me who really enjoys stock picking and, you know, has a reasonable amount of knowledge, I suppose, around it, ETFs are just a very important building block for any portfolio. You absolutely have to have them, in my opinion. They are the way you can add market returns to your portfolio, general equity exposure with the lowest possible cost. And also tax-free savings accounts. That's the other thing I always talk about, is how important it is to max out the TFSA every year. I max mine every year. It's my first port of call, because you can then go and buy ETFs. And again, you know, it's not quote unquote boring, because you can go and rotate your exposure. Basically, your TFSA just builds this amazing walled garden over time, where you can then rotate your exposure across ETFs without incurring any taxes. Again, that's the active investor in me using passive instruments, making Nico proud now. But it just shows, like, ETFs are a tool in the market. You know, they can be used for just a monthly debit order, long-term investing. Perfect. There are also hedge funds who use ETFs to express a view on a whole sector if they can go short on the thing. So it's a really fascinating area of finance. And I think what's been so great with this podcast is just learning the nuts and bolts that actually sit behind this thing, because it is complicated to run these funds, and that's your day to day.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of ETFs, I've been at Satix for a long time, and obviously our product set has really evolved over time. So what I've learned and what I've seen has expanded exponentially since I started here. You know, just the fact that we brought in the feeder portfolios, we've done multi-asset funds, we're now doing direct tracking in our Satix NASDAQ, we're doing direct tracking on a world MSCI world. I mean, how many people are actually doing that? So every day we're learning something new. Every day we're learning, you know, what the impact is of things that we do on the portfolio. So it's always, you know, heartwarming for me to see when we get it right. We, you know, we get a Salter for tracking performance, you know, for how tight our tracking is. That's really important to us, because we can't sell a product and say we 1% behind the benchmark. That is not index tracking. We have to be super tight. We, you know, excluding costs, and that you are on a daily basis, if you are anywhere from between 1 and 2 basis points away from the index, it's trouble because, you know, a client's going to see that. And even like you say, your hedge fund managers that are using the ETFs, you know, for their portfolios, they also want to know that we're going to be consistent, that we're going to be consistent in our tracking. And consistency is very key in tracking. And I think there's so much room for us to also grow in terms of innovation and technology. You know, the fact that on an index rebalance day, we are sending thousands of lines of trades through our trading desk, through all of our systems, and how that has evolved over time. We have internal systems that we have, you know, enhanced with accessing the JSE data through the FTP site, whereas a lot of places are using emails or using Excel. We've got all of this technology at the tip of our fingers to just enhance our process and to ensure that tracking is tight on a daily basis. And for the client also to know, you know, Satrix is consistent. You're going to get what you asked for, what's on the boxes, what is inside, and you can trust us. You can trust that at the end of the day, we have all our clients' best interests at heart. We want to make sure that you're getting your consistent tracking over time. And we also want to learn, you know, how can we do it better? You know, if there's a corporate action where we can maybe do a little bit better by taking the stock instead of cash, you know, can we do that? Can we give you a little bit more performance over and above your costs? And yeah, so I think it's important that when people are looking to invest their money, they look at someone that's going to be consistent, that's going to be, you know, that has been around in the industry for 20 plus years. And what we offer you is just, you know, what, there's so many options and you're going to get your money's worth if you put it in. And then in terms of tax-free savings, you know, that's always been very close to my heart because I think that it's so difficult these days for anyone to save money. You know, everything's getting expensive on a daily basis. You're paying more and more for petrol, for food, for all of those things. But if you are able to put away as little as, you know, R100 a month in a tax-free savings, yes, you may not be able to max it out, but at least you've put something away. And that was something that I also learned early on. When you work in a corporate, obviously you can save towards retirement. And it was something that I learned very early on was that if you max your retirement percentage right from when the beginning, like before you get all your nice increases and your new job titles, you know, when you start getting those increases, you don't even feel sort of the cost of, you know, putting away that high percentage. You just carry on. This is what you get. This is what you get. But at the end of the day, that's, you know, you gaining, you are paying your future self by putting away more money every month. And another thing that around tax-free savings is if you put away that R100 a month, but next year you get an increase at work and you just increase that R100 by that percentage, whether it's 6%, whether it's 3%, you start putting away a little bit more every year. And the way that money grows over time, it really, if you watch it grow, it's so amazing that if you just put it in there and you leave it there over time, you know, you've got yourself a little nest egg. You know, for the ones that are coming out of varsity to start working, you know, you've got your deposit for your car, you've got something to start and to buy a new home. It's a beautiful thing, tax-free savings, so that you don't have to pay that tax on it when you pay it out. And, you know, if you have kids, or it's really important to start early with them as well. Start as early as possible so that they also understand over time, there's just this compound growth that you can't get it anywhere else. You can't get it from buying a toy or whatever that is, but just putting that money in over time, that growth is very good.
Absolutely. So I think just to bring it to a close, just given your interesting career and how long you've been doing this for, and you know, someone's listening to this and they are either studying finance or perhaps they are in the financial space and they're considering a career change, or, you know, I think whenever you do one of these sort of day in the life shows, not that I do that much, or you just speak to someone who's clearly successful and has done some really cool stuff, it's always good to ask, you know, what do you wish someone had told you? What is that one piece of advice you wish you had received? I know it's such a cliche question, but it is that for a reason, because it's just that ability to impart just that one piece of wisdom now to everyone who's listening, you know, which is a wonderful opportunity.
So maybe I have two things.
Two pieces of wisdom. There we go.
The first one is that you really have to be curious. And when I say be curious, I mean Google is your friend. If you're unsure, Google it and ask the questions. No question is a dumb question. In my opinion, no question is a dumb question. You ask that question, Google, you find out what is going on, and then you go back and you also, you know, so that you can formulate an idea of what it is you want. And also sometimes what it is you don't want. But be curious, always be curious. And then the second part of it, a little bit of advice, is that nobody's going to do it for you. So nobody's going to put your hand up. Nobody's going to say, oh, I think it should be Ghost. It should be Lauren. Only if you there and you put yourself first in front of that opportunity is it going to come to you. Because you can't sit back and think people are seeing you work or seeing your hard work if you are not stepping up and saying, but I would like to do this. I would like to do that. That's been essential in my career specifically, is that I put up my hand for things. Even if I didn't know how to do it, I was curious. I found out how to do it. And I put my hand up and I said, I want to do this. If it means you're working after hours to be able to upskill yourself or whatever it is, just, you know, put your hand up and put yourself there front and center, because nobody else is going to do it for you.
Yeah, brilliant advice on both. Can't fault that. I think the fact that people are either listening to this podcast or reading this transcript already ticks the curiosity. I think the second piece of advice around just give yourself a chance, put your hand up. It's absolutely right. You know, you're going to get exactly the life that you design and the one that you want if you do that kind of stuff. So Lauren, thank you. I think this has been a very impressive podcast debut. I've got to tell you, I do hope to have you back because I've learned some cool stuff from you today. I thought that this was really great. So thank you so much for your time. And if anyone wants to connect with you, are you on the Cringe Festival that is LinkedIn? No, just kidding. You know, I'm more of an X/Twitter kind of guy. But are you on beloved LinkedIn, or, you know, if people want to connect?
I am on LinkedIn. You can connect with me there anytime. Definitely. But thanks so much for having me, Ghost. This is actually, it's as much as it's probably been great for you, it's also been great for me just to like tell my story and, you know, just my passion is index investing, and it's been amazing to chat to you and chat about it.
Podcasts are fun. That's why we do them. Lauren, thank you so much. And to the listeners, thanks for being here. And we will be back soon with another Satrix team member. I don't know, are there any more that you can dust off out of the cupboard, Lauren? Or are we getting, we'll have to see. I'm always excited to see who I get.
We'll have to see.
Yeah, exactly. Thanks for your time, Lauren. We'll do another one of these.
Thanks.
Ciao. Satrix Investments Pty Limited and Satrix Managers RF Pty Limited are authorized financial services providers. Nothing you have heard in this podcast should be construed as advice. Please do your own research and visit the Satrix website for more information on all their ETF products.